Okay, this is the Retro Game Club Podcast, Season 3, Episode 36, which is also Episode 108. I am Rob, and with me is someone else who looked much better before remastered, Hugh.
Yeah, I'm all blocky now. If I wiggle the wrong way, I gain pounds.
Yes, and you look better with a bunch of mist in front of you, apparently.
Yeah. Well, actually, that is an improvement.
What's going on?
Not much. You know, I was reading a lot. I did pre-order the GTA remastered games. Mm-hmm. I actually pre-ordered the physical copy a while ago now. However, whenever they were available for pre-sale. And the reviews are kind of funny, but at the same time, like, do people forget how horribly buggy the original games are?
Yeah, I was watching a few comparison videos this week.
Yeah, I mean, the original games, if you held them to, like, modern standards, like, I remember, like, things rendering, like, in the ground. Like, you'd be walking by and there'd be, like, a person who was, like, half buried in the ground and they were, like, trapped there. Yes. You saw, like, I just felt like I had to shoot them out of pity.
Yes.
And occasionally, like, I remember when I was playing Grand Theft Auto 3 because I played it just last year. There was, at some point, where I just was walking and my character just fell through nothing. And it was many screens of the character falling. And then finally I just landed in like one of the train stations. I'm like, I don't know what just happened, but that was pretty cool.
I like the, apparently cars, I guess spawn in the middle of the air and they fall. Like that's on purpose. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's so they don't spawn in the middle of something into matter.
Yeah, so they'll get stuck in the ground maybe.
Yeah.
You'd see that in the old games too. They spawn a little bit above the ground.
Well, I think this happened in the old game too, where sometimes it would forget that it already spawned, like the ambulance or whatever. So you'd see one ambulance just fall on top of another one. No damage or anything, just kind of hanging out. Like stuff like that too.
Yeah, and when I was playing San Andreas, there was a lot of just dumb car stuff. Like, cars would get into a pile, like a car would be driving erratically. It would cause an accident and there'd be like a multi-car pileup and like every other car on the road would just go full speed into the pileup. And eventually you would have, you know, 20 or 30 cars piled up because no one slowed down.
Yeah.
Well, nothing like how it would work in real life.
People are complaining about that now because that's the one bug they fixed. So there's a whole YouTube video on it. If you in the original San Andreas would put a car in the middle of the highway, yeah, it would create the funniest situation you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. If you probably closer to life than what they did, which is if you do that now, traffic just stops. It slows down and stops like normal down to earth human beings would, which we know would never happen. So people are kind of upset about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I figure I'll end up getting the physical game. I probably won't install it till January. And by then, it'll be like, this is what's horrible with the PlayStation 4. Like, I grab my Switch whenever I need to install a PlayStation 4 game or my DS or something else. Because like, oh, I want to play a game. Oh, right. It's going to take like 4 hours before I can actually play this PlayStation 4 game.
Yeah, it's like they throttle downloads, too, because even if you have a fast connection, it doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah. Well, even the install. I mean, the last game I installed, which is some kind of this really weird, dorky JRPG that I don't want to talk about on the show because it's too weird. like, it didn't have any updates, but it still took like 20 minutes just to install from the disc. And it doesn't even seem to be that big of a game.
Nice. Well,
so I don't know.
Rockstar did send out an apology and they're going to fix some things. And if you bought this remaster, whatever they call it, definitive edition, you also get the original games for free now because they did take all those down. So I wonder if, since you bought the physical, how you could get the originals too.
Well, I have them here in PlayStation 2, so it's not really a huge concern for me.
I'm just wondering how they would deal with that, but
Well, they're on they're on PSN. You can download
them. Yeah, so they might just say like, hey, if you plugged in this DVD, then you get this too or something. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. I wrote in the notes here, Atari, the company that calls themselves Atari, they are doing their own version of limited run games. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did.
So loose 2,600 games for $50 is what they're doing. And their mission seems to be printing games that did not have physical releases before. Some of these games like may have appeared on a flashback or a ROM form. How do you think this is going to go?
I think they'll sell a few, but I don't think it's going to go very well. There's somehow something's going to go wrong.
Right. Like, people have been making homebrew 2600 games forever. I predict like these games cause your system to overheat or something.
Yeah. Or they just don't pay the original programmers anything for them.
Yeah. Well, they probably don't have to. Contractually, they probably don't have to.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this episode will be coming out maybe in time for the drive to grandma's house for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about doing like a Black Friday shopping guide for like retro game stuff on Black Friday. And the deals are pretty bad this year. I did not see anything that I felt was worth talking about.
Yeah, I think anything on sale is just hot garbage no one wanted to buy since everything's still on a boat somewhere trying to get to here.
So that's about it for me. What have you been up to?
Let's see. I finished Senua's Sacrifice, Hellblade. I want to say that this is one of my favorite games I've played in a very, very long time. I'm not going to spoil kind of the big joke of the game. Not joke, but kind of the programmer's messing with the player a little bit. But I like that you could get powered up pretty quickly. It really teaches you, like, there's no HUD or anything. It forces you to just look at the controls from the option menu and see what you could do. And I see high replayability in it. And I would say, yeah, if anyone hasn't played this game, I think it's on sale. I thought it was the best sound in any game I've ever played. No question about it.
Sound or music?
Sound. The sound design.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, I can't say enough nice things about this game. Now, it's not one of those games you feel that great walking away from. You know, it's you're avenging your dead husband. So, you know, not a happy game, but yeah, I loved it. So I'll probably replay that. And I went to a more bright game since Hellblade is pretty much all dark. Skyward Sword, about 2 hours in right now. I don't know how I feel about this game. So far, I'm not having fun playing it.
Did you play it originally on the Wii?
No, this is my first time ever playing it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's it's hard to go back to that after doing Breath of the Wild because it is very, very confined. It's really confined compared to even like Wind Waker.
Mm-hmm.
I like overall, I think Skyward Sword has it. I'll just put it this way: like the soundtrack's really good, and the dungeon design is great. So there's a lot of good stuff in the game. Like it has Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, I think, have the best dungeons in the Zelda series.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels very, very locked down compared to Breath of the Wild. I mean, compared to Breath of the Wild, every game feels locked down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But compared to even like Wind Waker, it feels very, very locked down.
Yeah. That's pretty much what Zach said too. I was emailing with him earlier. He said, I really have to get through some garbage to kind of get through to the fun stuff of the game. So he said it does get better, which pretty much I think is what you're saying. Like, get to the dungeons.
Yeah.
And I saw the new Ghostbusters movie, and I have to say it was fantastic. It's almost a thesis to why the 2016 Ghostbusters and the newest Star Wars movies and stuff are garbage. Like, this is how you bring back a series. This is how you create a fan service with bringing in new fans. And yeah, can't say enough great things about the entire cast and the writing and everything about it. So there's my review of that. And yeah, I was going to go into a few other things I had going on this week, but no, let's just jump into some news.
All right. Yeah, let's do that. Hardware news. Intel 4004, world's first commercially available microprocessor turns 50.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit before my time, but it had 2300 transistors. It was 730 kilohertz in speed, and it was pretty much 4-bit.
Okay.
That could be argued, but I think right after this is when the 8080 came out, and then the 8086.
Yeah, it is a 4-bit computer or processing unit. I'm reading the actual specs on it here.
Yeah.
Currently, they are ceramic. That's okay.
Yeah, so not much else to say about that one. That is definitely retro.
It is. I can't think of anything it was used for that I recall. Like, I don't think it was in any... So we're coming in 1971, so I doubt it was in any arcade machines or anything we would recognize.
I doubt it. Maybe calculators. Maybe.
Yeah, probably military computers were the main.
Possibly, yeah.
Microsoft adds 76 more games to the Xbox backward compatibility program.
I think that's great. Now they're up to about 700 original Xbox games that you could play on the new latest Xbox. I think that's great they're doing that. They're actually paying programmers good money to keep retro alive. I think it's awesome. Now, I haven't ever played an Xbox, so <Right. laughs> so there's that. If any of our listeners has an Xbox and uses these 20-year-old games in it, please let us know. Email at retrogameclub.net. Probably the last time we will have a story about cramming a Game Boy inside a DS or vice versa, since I feel like we have one every week. We do have another article now, and it's, I don't know how I feel about this one. It's
destroying two perfectly good systems. This is cramming a DS inside a Game Boy, and also adding a second screen to the Game Boy at the same time.
Yeah, I'm not too into this one. But moving on to,
as the comments say, this is Frankenstein ugly.
Yes, it is. It looks like something you really don't want to play with.
I would say it's an interesting like thought experiment. You know, like if you wanted to learn, like it's an interesting engineering experiment. Like I'm not bashing it. I just don't ever want this.
And I think we've just had so many stories like this. They're just kind of all starting to look the same to me.
Well, what could they cram inside of what for it to be interesting to you?
Oh, man. I was really impressed with that Wii stuff, but I'm even not that impressed with that anymore.
Okay, what if you could cram a 3DO into a Game Boy Micro?
That would be pretty impressive.
Yeah. I don't know if it's possible. I doubt it. But
or like a Jaguar. Yeah.
What if I crammed a Jaguar with CD into a CDI case?
I think
probably that, room for that.
That might cause
a
paradox.
A Jaguar to a Saturn for sure. I think that's a real project. If you wanted to destroy a Saturn, I feel like that could work. All right. Homebrew, ROM hacks, and other adjacent things.
Yeah, this is this article on ROMhacking.net is Star Fox Super FX2. So this is Star Fox, but a hack that makes it use the Super FX2 chip. So I guess the difference between the two, they're pretty much the same chip, just the original Super FX chip that Star Fox used has a 10 megahertz clock, even though it's a 21 or so megahertz chip. So it's kind of at half speed. The 2, which Yoshi's Island used, is actually at 21 megahertz.
And Star Fox 2 that you get on like the Super Nintendo Classic MIDI was also Super FX2, is that right?
I don't know which one that used. That's a good question.
I thought it was, but apparently the biggest difference is the game plays a lot faster.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, if there's no real-time clock in it, right? It would just have to go at the speed of the chip.
Yeah. So the difference, the Super FX1, Super FX1 is Star Fox, Dirt Racer, Dirt Track, FX, Stunt Race, Star Fox 2, so I was wrong there, and Vortex. And then the first upgrade of it ran Doom, and then, yeah, Yoshi's Island and Winter Gold. So this Winter Gold must look really good for being a game I barely remember existing.
Yeah, I don't remember that one at all.
It looks like virtual racing, but with skiing and maybe the skeleton. I don't know. Skiing for sure.
Oh, yeah. The skeleton is a type of sledding, right?
Yeah, it's with you're the mayor. They call it the skeleton because I thought it's because everyone died that tried it. But it's because it's like the bobsled, but stripped down to just the board, just the skeleton of the bobsled.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing protecting you. That is such a fun event to watch.
It just looks so insane.
Yeah, when those people fall, it looks like Unreal Engine ragdoll effect, just the body flopping around.
Yeah. So what this has is the luge, which is very similar to the skeleton, but luge, you're going feet first, as opposed to the skeleton where you're going head first. But this actually looks like a really good game. I have to try this.
It might be a good winter game for us.
Yeah. Winter Gold. Yeah, we got to try that. And then a homebrew, at least. The 2021 Interactive Fiction Competition just completed, and they have a list of winners. So you can go, most of these play in the browser. So you don't need to download anything special to play most of these.
Were you able to look at any of these?
I played the one where you are a spam filter.
I didn't.
That's the game.
That's a great idea for a game.
It's called, yeah, You Are Spam Zapper 3.1. And while zapping your computer owner's spam, you find that they're in some sort of trouble, and you have to work with the other apps on the computer to try and help your user.
That's really interesting.
While zapping spam. First place is something called And Then You Come to a House Not Unlike the Previous One.
Okay.
So, nice. Wander through an apparently infinite number of spooky mansions, solving a basic puzzle in each one.
A few horror games here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are in our show notes if anyone wants to check those out.
Then last news section here. Oh, no, sorry. Doom Running on Things, 32X Resurrection. So this is a ROM hack of the European version of Doom for 32X. I'm assuming it's probably some PAL reason why they... This is, supports both PAL and NTSC, so I don't know why they use the European ROM as the base. Anyhow, it adds levels from the Jaguar version and generally improves performance radically.
Yeah, and you get the Jaguar HUD and some PS1 assets and Saturn assets. And like you said, the funny thing, what made me laugh on this is it now uses both processing units, so it could get up to 30 frames a second, because the first one ran at 15 frames a second, which means the original programmers of the Doom port for 32X didn't bother with the second processor at all.
Probably, yeah. I mean, that was the hard part. So this, it makes sense why they use a lot from the Jaguar version. So I assume the Jaguar code must have leaked. Mm-hmm. And again, Jaguar fans, you can cover your ears if you want, but the Jaguar ran the Motorola 68000 as its CPU. And most developers just wrote using the Motorola 68000. So if you have Jaguar Doom, you already have a version of Doom that is fairly well optimized for the 68000. Mm-hmm. And the 32X is running on the CPU is still the 68000. The 32X version seems less polished than the Jaguar. If you play both of these?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the Jaguar version actually feels like you're playing Doom.
Yeah.
So the 32X version, I assume, is not using a lot of the 32X hardware and is probably just mostly a Motorola 68000 game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the only Jaguar games I have played.
Mm-hmm. It's one of maybe five that are worth playing.
So 50% of the lineup for Jaguar.
Yeah.
I think the next one was yours.
Yeah. So it's the last section here. Odd and interesting things. So, this isn't really gaming related, but it's related to Windows 95, which always fascinates me. So it's called The Inside Story of the Outside Investigation of Soft RAM 95. So remember back when like Windows 95 or even DOS were around, people would sell you like these various apps to double your memory.
Yeah, RAM doubler. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so this is Raymond Chen wrote this. He's a longtime engineer on Microsoft Windows. You know, worked on Windows 95, works on Windows 11 or whatever the newest version is. Like, he's just one of the core like Windows developers. And he was asked to investigate why Soft RAM 95 crashed on Windows 95. And what he found is he decompiled the program and eventually found that it in fact did no compression at all. That there was a method to compress pages but all that did was nothing. It was just a pass. It was just a stub method. So it did all the work of like reorganizing your memory into blocks that were in memory, blocks that were in memory but compressed, and then parts that were on disk. So the way like Windows memory worked is, let's say you have 8 meg of RAM. You'd have 8 meg of RAM available, and then you'd have like an 8 meg page file on the hard disk.
Yeah.
And if you had to pull memory pages off the hard disk, it was slow. So Windows prioritized keeping frequently used things in your actual RAM. And what things like SoftDisk would do is they would keep 4 meg, you know, on live memory, and then they take the other 4 meg and compress it. So anytime you tried to access those pages out of RAM, it would theoretically compress and decompress those pages. So you would have more, that 4 meg would now become 8. So you see, so now instead of 8 meg of RAM, you have, I guess you only have 12 by that math, but you see what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe it would increase your page size too, to kind of to trick you even more. And it did all that stuff of segmenting the memory, but what it didn't do was actually compress anything.
Yeah, that's just amazing.
And then he explains why, how they didn't actually know what they were doing, because they were doing things where you have to basically lock parts of memory because they're like synchronized events, and they weren't actually using the Windows API correctly, it looks like.
Wow. So these guys got sued hard, right?
I don't know what happened to the SoftRAM 95 people. Let's see here. SoftRAM, proprietary software made by Synchronous.com. It won the award Worst Tech Product of All Time by PC World. There was an FTC investigation that basically into their claims that, because other people outside of Microsoft noticed that their product didn't really do anything. And they filed for bankruptcy in July 1998.
Shocking.
Their final program, Upgrade Aid 98, claimed to allow users to downgrade from Windows 98 to Windows 95. So it's like the people that are like, hey, I just got the COVID vaccine. Now I'm going to like take a bath in Epsom salt to remove it or something, right?
Yes.
Is that what this is? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know why you'd want to do, downgrade. Like, the boss tells you have to upgrade to Windows 95. You're like, oh, that's what you think.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all right.
Pretty rebellious.
Yeah. Game development in 8 bits by Kevin Zurowell.
Yeah. So I stumbled upon this one. It was recommended me on YouTube. So that's how nerdy my YouTube recommendations are. So, you know, shocking, right? But this guy, this is a very good 40-minute long presentation he gave in October, and it goes through kind of how to code for the NES, but it doesn't really get into programming. So if you are a programmer or you'd like to become a programmer one day, this is kind of for both of those people. He does a great job of explaining how everything works. And near the end, he gets a little bit technical, which I really appreciated. And there's links to his, oh no, there's not a link in here. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. He has a book out called Famicom Party, which is also kind of a beginner's guide to NES programming. And then he has a GitHub page that has a bunch of examples to get you started. So really, really cool dude. So I thought I'd put this in there. Good thing to watch while you're at lunch or something. I don't know.
Going to Holland soon, then make sure you play this lost Super Mario World sequel. I assume Holland must allow visitors now.
I guess so. But have you ever heard of, Super Mario's Wacky World?
No. Is this some CDI thing?
Yes. It never came out. It was a demo that they made that really impressed Nintendo, but by the time it was actually going to get made, Nintendo had moved along. So, this was almost greenlit. Super Mario's Wacky World. So you could see, if you go to Holland, you could actually see it in person, but, or you could just watch it on, what is this, Twitter? So really strange. The next thing is, Pac-Man Museum, which is not a museum. It is, a game. So it's a collection of games that is coming out soon. There's no price yet, but you get Pac-Man, Super Pac-Man, Pac-N-Pel, Pac-Land, Pac-Mania, pack attack, pack in time, pack two different pack arrangements, Pac-Man Champion, pack motos, which I'd never heard of before, pack and roll remix, Pac-Man Battle Royale, and my all-time favorite, Pac-Man 256. And this is coming out for PC and all the consoles in early 2022. Okay.
Do you think you'll be able to get it as like one game, or are they going to do like on the Switch? They tend to sell a lot of these like packs.
Oh, yeah.
You can get four of these games for $30 if you want the other four. Because like this right here, like Pac-Man Arrangement is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I like that game a lot. And I like Super Pac-Man. I don't know why someone has to like it.
Pretty much everything but Pac-Land.
Yeah, everything is at Pac-Land. I forget Pac in Time. I don't really recall.
Pac Motos was a Wii exclusive, so that's kind of cool that it's being released again.
Okay.
But,
do I know Pac in Time? Is that a platformer?
Let me look that one up. I looked these up earlier. I can't remember that one.
I think it's kind of like I think Pac in Time is maybe not a great game.
Oh, it was on the SNES.
Yeah.
But, you know, assuming this isn't... Oh, yeah, it looks like a platformer. Still looks better than Pac-Land, though. It's also on Game Boy.
Yeah, I mean, looking better than Pac-Land is not maybe a high bar.
It just needs to use the D-pad. And you've already beat Pac-Land.
So it's called Pac-Man Museum Plus. And is that available to pre-order?
I haven't looked for pre-order. But as of today, I don't think a date is set. It just says early 2022. My hope is that they actually sell this for something that people want to, you know, pay for it. Like if they do $40, no one's going to want to buy this. But if they do $20, you know, they would probably get way, way more people willing to pay that and make a lot more money than if they would sell it for $40 or $50. So. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I don't see it on Amazon yet. There's Namco Museum Arcade Pack, which is, again, the ripoff that I was talking about, where it's like $40 for a couple of games.
No, it's not on Steam yet.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. We'll report on it once it's released. But yeah, I'm actually excited about this one. I thought it was going to just be some shovelware. But we actually have a kind of a topic this week, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very related to our previous topic. I was thinking a lot about GameCube in the past few months. And out on my site, I just this week posted the Electronics Boutique Christmas 2001 catalog. So this is a catalog I've had sitting around for a long time that I just didn't scan because... kind of the things I talked about last episode where I was trying to figure out how to do a nostalgic article about late 2001.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided I would just like this thing turns 20 this month. So I better just post it now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's 100 pages. I don't expect to talk about all of them. Since I just wrote about all of them, I may be burned out on it. What do you see in this catalog you like? How do you want to do this?
So, yeah, this is the GameCube and Xbox, the original Xbox era. And this thing has and PS2 is in there too, but, and PS1 and,
Dreamcast and Nintendo 64
and Game Boy Advance and PC and a bunch of gadgets. I mean, this is when there was a lot going on in gaming.
There was. Yeah. Yeah. And it was sort of I want to say it's pre-internet, like everyone had internet, but some people still had dial-up. Like, it wasn't a time when you had to be connected to play games, either, you know, PC or definitely console.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. And the new Star Wars prequels were kind of just coming out still, so a lot of Star Wars going on.
A lot of Star Wars, a little bit of Harry Potter. You know, the first Harry Potter movie came out 20 years ago, too. And unfortunately, the late Dave Mura was on top of the world because there is a lot of Dave Mura in this catalog.
Yeah, yeah, he was blowing up then. And yeah, I just noticed one of our Game of the Weeks is in this.
Yeah.
Let me scroll down here to, what did I want to pick on here?
I do admit my lack of Xbox knowledge in this catalog, because I noticed, you know, so the Xbox was launching and it came with a game, or one of the launch games was something called Halo Combat Evolved. And up until scanning this catalog, I know people are going to think I'm joking. This is 100% not a joke. I thought Halo Combat Evolved was a sequel to Halo.
Oh,
I thought
yeah.
The first game was just called Halo, in that there was a second game called Halo Combat Evolved.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the PS2 section, that really struck me, because there's three games I haven't played, and one of them I actually recently downloaded to my PlayStation to try it out, and that one is Dark Cloud. Have you ever played that?
No, I remember hearing about it when it was new.
Yeah, so that's been on my radar. Okage, I've heard, is fantastic, and Ico, the prequel to Shadow of the Colossus, is a lot of people's all-time favorite game.
Okay.
So I definitely want to check that one out. So those three really struck me, and they're all in the same section. And games are roughly as much as they are now, about $54, $56, somewhere mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah, right around that range until you get to like some of the older systems. The other thing that jumps out about that really stands out on this catalog is this is before EA having a complete monopoly on sports games, because there's many pages of like the 989 sports games, which were, I mean, the 2K games, those, like, they were all excellent. It's really a shame that there's just one company making sports games, because without competition, I don't really think they're innovating much.
Yeah, I don't think they've changed much in a long time.
I was also fascinated by a product in this catalog called the Shark Drive.
What is that?
I don't know. It's made by Game Shark, hence the Shark Drive. And it is a zip drive that I guess you can connect to the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
To back things. Like, the PlayStation 2 had a bay for a hard drive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an IDE original port. Yeah.
So was this meant to be like this clearly doesn't fit in the hard drive bay. This is an external accessory. I would really like, did anyone listening have the Shark Drive? And can you tell me what you did with the Shark Drive? I assume there's some way to play, like, you rip games to a zip disk and play them. Even though the zip disk is only 100 meg, so it's a very small number of PlayStation 2 games you could pirate that way, I guess.
I'm seeing Shark Hub for the PS2.
Yeah, but you're not going to find anything, man. I looked.
Wow, that is so strange. Huh. I'm looking one more place. Wait, I know I'll edit this part, but I didn't see that earlier.
The other interesting thing is, like, you know, that Nintendo 64, Dreamcast, and PlayStation 1 were all kind of dead systems at this point. But if you look at this catalog, like, PlayStation 1 still has many pages of games, or at least a few pages. And Dreamcast has, like, two pages of games. But the poor Nintendo 64, which really wasn't even replaced until the GameCube came out, just gets one page.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, Nintendo 64 is in really, really sad shape here.
So there's another PS2 page that has the giant title Thrustmaster.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to Google, but...
No, they made sticks. They made arcade sticks and stuff.
Okay, well, I'm still not Googling that one.
Yeah, don't Google it, but they made they made most of their money on Flight Simulator, really. So they sold a joystick that everybody who bought Flight Simulator wanted.
Okay. Game Boy Advance is repped hard in this. I mean,
yeah.
Many pages and a lot of good games and a lot of not great games. A lot of greatest hits and Namco Museum type stuff. But what's going on with E.T. on Game Boy Advance?
I don't know. There is some kind of weird E.T. revival this year, because there's also like a PlayStation E.T. game that came out that year.
That is
so
strange.
Someone just picked up the license and decided they were going to make games. I looked it up. This was not the year that the DVD version with like the guns edited out was like released.
The special edition kind of thing.
Was later. So I don't know why E.T. was having a revival. Have you ever been on the E.T. ride at Universal Studios, by the way?
Yes, it's terrifying.
It is, yeah, because it's like, now you're on E.T.'s home planet. I didn't even know there were more of them, you know? And I feel like this is sort of adjacent to that, like, that E.T. having other adventures, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be about the movie. It seems to be about the character E.T. doing other stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like Elf on Melmac or something.
Yeah.
What else do we have here? We have some, on GBA, we have some Castlevania. Frogger is repped here pretty good. There's a few Frogger games.
Yeah, there's two different kinds of Frogger. There's like this new Frogger reboot where he's wearing clothes because frogs need clothes, I guess. And then there's some original Frogger where he's just a frog. But this is like a weird anthropomorphic, you know, Frogger who's got like human build, but he's otherwise a frog, like Frog from Chrono Trigger, I guess, but not quite as cool.
Battletoads kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe. But he's not dressed like he's really out to fight. He's sort of dressed like an explorer.
Weird.
I don't know anything about this line of Frogger games. It doesn't look good.
Jeez, there's a Game Shark for the GBA. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at these other accessories here, other than the lights and the magnifying glasses, which when I got my GBA, I couldn't believe that it wasn't backlit.
Yeah. I got the first revision, the flippy kind, the, you know, like makeup compact style one that was perfectly bright, I thought.
And Game Boy Color too. I missed this earlier.
It has two pages for Game Boy Color, still
more than N64.
Yeah. And some of the stuff, like I'm sure this Pokemon Crystal game probably goes for like $10 billion right now. I was sort of fascinated by what Mary Kate and Ashley Crush Course could be. And I watched a video of it on YouTube. This is a true story. And it kind of looks like a whole bunch of mini games crammed together.
Okay. On how to pick up.
It doesn't even seem to be about how to pick up dudes at the mall. No.
Wow. Weird. That's really strange.
Some Dreamcast. Dreamcast has a, even though the Dreamcast was discontinued earlier that year, they still are selling Dreamcast games. Many of them for $9.99. A lot of cheap Dreamcast games.
Yeah, yeah. Phantasy Star Online, still $40.
Yeah. I think that might actually have been new.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, Jet Grind Radio, fantastic game, $10. Space Channel 5, I've never played it, but I have it, and I heard it was great. $9. And Bass Fishing, great game, $9.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of can't go wrong there. How much? It doesn't give a price for the Dreamcast here, though.
It doesn't, because I can't believe they would have Dreamcast hardware in the stores still. It was discontinued in like March or April of that year. And I ran out. I bought one that day once I heard it was discontinued and they're slashing prices. Because I'm like, oh, I'm never going to be able to get a Dreamcast again. So I just bought one that day. And I can't remember how much it was off, but it was a pretty good deal.
What a great system.
Yeah. And all the 2K games have new releases on the Dreamcast that year, too. And these are all, they're all solid. These are all very good sports games.
And going back to the N64 page, I mean, so when the system came out in 96,
mm-hmm.
So a lot of these are 5-year-old games. Mm-hmm. They're still going for $40 to $50.
Some of them are, yeah. I mean, Smash Brothers is 40. Super Mario 64 is a launch game. That's 40. Mario Kart's 40. But hey, you know, South Park is $11.99.
Yeah. Yeah, and Shadow Man, I don't remember that one.
Oh. Then there's a fun section here where they ask staff people with their full names to pick a game for Christmas. I guess. Here's what they call the experts have to recommend.
That's crazy. And yeah. What about the mail-in section?
That's at the beginning. Yeah, those. Did you think those letters were real?
There's no way they're real. It was just some editor writing it and answering his own question.
Yeah, because the first was literally like, I can't decide whether to buy my son a GameCube or Xbox for his birthday. Yeah, okay. That seems like a real thing. Did you try asking him?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He already knows which one he wants.
Yeah. But we got, ton of PC stuff here, which really surprised me.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when I was going through this, I'm like, I don't know any of these games.
Let's see. I had Civilization 3. I'm trying to find the ones I had here. Yeah. Not many I recognize. Alone in the Dark. Zoo Tycoon. Mech Commander 2. Let's see. What else? Don't worry. I'm not going to read all these.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's 100 PC games in the catalog.
Yeah, wow. So PC was repping pretty hard back then.
Yeah.
And then GTA 2. Like, no one's going to want... Well, when did GTA 3 come out?
Around this time. But on PC, I suspect it was probably a pain to run GTA, something like GTA 3, which I don't know. I don't know if that had a PC release day one. I don't think it did.
And yeah, there's no way.
But GTA 2, you don't need a video card.
Yeah, yeah, it's just top down.
Right, or you need a high-end video card.
Yeah, wow. And we got the shovelware here. We got some virus scanners for $45. McAfee Internet Security for $70.
Uh-huh. The weirdest item in the catalog, Mandrake Linux Gaming Edition.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. It has a picture of The Sims on the front, so I guess it's a version of Mandrake Linux, which hasn't been made for 10 years at least. I don't know. It's been a while. Like, Linux was kind of a new... I mean, Linux started in what, 93 was the first release, 93, 94, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely not a household term in 2001.
No, no.
So, I don't know what Mandrake Linux Gaming Edition is.
Well, it back then...
The Sims... I guess.
I mean, I guess I was using Linux back then, and there was Free Civ, a free version of Civilization. There was what's not free anymore, X-Plane. And
was Wine available by then?
Yeah, but it was, I don't know if it actually was available way back then.
Because isn't that really what the Steam board is doing? It's just, They created launchers for Wine for each game in the library, custom launchers to run the game optimized, you know, for whatever. Because Wine has like a million, Wine is very complicated to run. There's 100 different knobs you can turn on it, and they figured that out for each of the games.
But the fun thing about this new Steam OS is some of the games run faster that way than the DirectX calls.
Yeah, I can believe that.
But yeah, I'm trying to think of the other free games for Linux back then, but they're eluding me now.
Yeah, that is, it's just a weird, weird item. And
at PC Relocator, you could spend $50 to transfer stuff from one computer to another.
Yeah.
Probably through a parallel cable.
Right. Or you could learn how to use the rsync command.
Yeah, or just burn a CD.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I guess hard drives weren't that large back then.
Yeah.
How big was... Wait, did they sell hard... Sometimes, do they have hard drives in this catalog? No, they do not.
They do have graphics cards, though. The Radeon 7500 with 64 meg of RAM for your EGP port for $200. And for $300, the Radeon 8500.
Oh, wow. I don't know if those are any good, but... You could spend less and get the GeForce 2MX, 64 meg for $100, or spend more and get the GeForce 3 Titanium, 64 meg AGP for $350.
And for $39 at a discount, you could get some 256 megabyte RAM chip.
Yeah, RAM is super cheap for some reason. And then there's another page with more video cards, but then also one of these like giant Sound Blaster things where it's like a box, you know, the size of a small car that has a Sound Blaster card and a bunch of other stuff in it.
So over the past 10 years, call it 15 years, I've bought many motherboards, put some computers together, if not for myself or friends. Why are Sound Blasters still a thing since every single motherboard has surround sound out and optical and all that stuff? I understand why you would need like a Pro Tools card for, you know, that has DSP chips to run, you know, 256 tracks at once, but why would, and I'm not making fun of anyone, I legit want to know, like, why would someone in 2021 buy a Sound Blaster?
Because they watched a video on YouTube about how to build a computer, and they talked to people on Discord who insist you have to have one.
That's probably the correct answer. Yeah.
I've not even considered buying a Sound Blaster in the past 20 years. So
there's no reason. I'm not playing Sierra games on a 46 that need the extra MIDI upgrade chips on it. You do have some Pokemon cards in here.
Really? Did I miss those?
And you're at the bottom with some Harry Potter and some Magic cards, some Lord of the Rings cards too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just looked at that. I'm like, oh yeah, card games, whatever. Like, I just, not my thing. Yeah, so these are probably worth $1 billion today, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's see.
Do you want to buy your kid a rifle? They have fake rifles.
Fake rifles with scopes on them too.
Yeah. It looks like the kind of thing that would be on one of those arcade hunting games, but it's not an accessory. It's literally just a fake rifle that's at a video game store for reasons.
I'm now looking at the coupon section, which I missed before, and there's a coupon to get $20 off a Shark Drive for the PS2. It doesn't say what it does though.
Yeah, and I was skeptical because when I saw, like, okay, this is a new product, but you already are taking $20 off. something bad is going on here.
Buy two pre-owned video games or DVDs and get one pre-owned video game of equal or lesser value for 50% off. That's not the best, but hey, if there's three you want, definitely better than nothing. I'm really glad you uploaded this. This is a really cool, catalog. And I probably flipped through it back in 2001. And I hope our listeners, we should have said this up front. This is in our show notes. You could flip through this with us, but,
Yeah. And it's free. I don't have ads. I don't even track usage on my site. So download it, whatever. I don't care.
You're not putting crazy third-party cookies on people's computers.
I don't have first-party cookies. Like, this is just everything on my site is basically a static HTML, and it's all free. I don't care. It costs me nothing to host. Like, running basically a static site on Amazon, even with like these giant images, like there's like 20 meg of images or 20, sorry. It's more than 20 meg of images. Hold on, I gotta look at the size again. It's a lot. It's a very large download to download each of these. I don't care. Like, it costs nothing to host this thing on Amazon.
Exactly. So. Yeah. I think one of my closing thoughts on this is there's a lot of games that started in this era that are being re-released now, have tons of sequels, like Luigi's Mansion, Pikmin, Super Monkey Ball, I wish we would get back into a time where main AAA, whatever, you know, I don't know, was Pikmin a AAA game back then? I don't know. But like first party studios are creating new IPs. I hope we get back to that instead of just sequel after sequel.
I hope we get back to someone else other than EA making sports games.
And Star Wars games.
And Star Wars games, yeah.
So there you have it. Want to jump into some games we played this week?
Yeah. Star Wars Rogue Squadron 2, Rogue Leader.
Yes. So this is a game that was in that catalog, and it was released just about 20 years ago today. So November 18th, 2001. It is a sequel to the Rogue Squadron game that came out on N64. It was developed by the same developers, who I will not say their name because they actually didn't pay their developers a lot. They went out of business and a lot of lawsuits and stuff. So anyway, this game spans from, I should start over by saying this is a kind of flight simulator, dogfight simulator game where you go on missions and either you're on the defense or you're on the offense. It starts at the end of Star Wars A New Hope and really ends with the end of Star Wars Return of the Jedi. So, you know, the three original movies there. And this uses the GameCube controller fantastically. Now, this time, I don't have this game anymore. So I actually emulated this and used an Xbox controller, and it worked fantastic. I couldn't believe how well this worked. It took a little bit of tweaking, but really surprised it. I was able to like double scale and stuff like that. It just looked really sharp. Anyway, you go through the, you know, using X-Wings and Y-Wings and A-Wings and all that stuff. And it's exactly what you would think it would be. I think it's a fantastic kind of simulator adventure game. The guy that did, that was Wedge Antilles in the original Star Wars, came back and recorded some new lines for this. I think it's a fantastic game. I have nothing bad to say about it. In fact, I got that Squadrons game, that 2021 X-Wing simulator game, which is fantastic. It's what I've always been asking for, you know, just give us an X-Wing game. And they did it, and it is fantastic. But it's a first-person game. And for some reason, with these flight sims, I like the third person, just being behind the X-Wing so you can kind of see how cool it looks. And that's what this does really well. There are some parts that are a bit clunky, a bit difficult, but yeah, I thought they did a great job. It was a great upgrade and mind-blowing graphics for the time. And that's really all I have to say about it. It was well-received back then too. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I liked it a lot when it was new. I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. I use cheat codes constantly when I play this game. I don't think I've ever really played it much without cheat codes. Some of the missions are very, very difficult. So in my defense, that's why. Also, you can unlock vehicles that otherwise you have to play like lots of times and get really good at the game to unlock. So like one of the vehicles you can get is like the Naboo Starfighter, which of course shouldn't exist in that world, but it does.
That's the yellow and silver one, right? Yeah. Or yellow and blue.
Yeah, that one. That thing is so much fun to play as. It really is like the most fun vehicle in the game. And then you also kind of realize like some of the vehicles they created in Star Wars are like completely impractical. So like on Bespin, you know, the gas level, you have that little twin vehicle. You probably had that toy when you were a kid, you know, with the two seats. That thing is horrible to fly.
I can imagine. Yep.
It is no good. And even the Millennium Falcon, which is like everybody's favorite ship from the series, that's not very good for combat.
And also Boba Fett's ship too.
Yeah, that thing is rough.
Yeah, which they recently renamed because it doesn't really hold up in 2021.
I suppose. I don't know where they got the name from. Like, I don't know what the origin of the name is, but... and then there's, like, one level where you have to fight, like, three Star Destroyers. I think it's towards the end of the game. It's impossible. I don't think any human being can defeat that level.
That one really reminded me of the X-Wing PC game.
Okay.
So there were a lot of games like that in the original X-Wing. And that's one thing I should say about this is... it is much easier to play these with a proper controller, like the GameCube controller, than it is to play like X-Wing or TIE Fighter with a flight stick and a keyboard. So some quality of life there. But I think I did all right in that one, but I've played so many of these games that other than the Hoth level, I'm so bad at taking down AT-ATs.
Yeah.
Once I get past those, I'm pretty much fine.
Yeah, that was maybe the only thing. Like, I did not like the PlayStation 4 Star Wars game. Was it Battlefront? Battleground? I don't know. But that one, taking out the AT-ATs was actually really, really easy. Especially compared to, like, the GameCube version where you feel like your hand is going to fall off trying to, you know, hold the controller in the exact position that you have to while you're lassoing the AT-ATs.
And trying not to smash into the ground. So you're just kind of going up and down over and over again at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, Empire Strikes Back on the 2600 is by far the best AT-AT combat of any game.
I believe it. That was a Game Club game. I sincerely love that game. I own two copies of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does it much better.
Burnout,
yeah. So this is one, I played a lot of the later games, and I have the GameCube version of the first and just needed an excuse to finally try it. And it's all right. I mean, it's a very good racing game for the GameCube. Like, the GameCube doesn't have a lot of these super realistic racing games, or if it does, I'm just blanking on them. But I think in that era, like, PlayStation 2 clearly won that genre. The thing that I like best about the Burnout games, though, is the crash mode. Where, you know, there's like a traffic jam and you're driving a fire truck through it and seeing how many dollars of damage you can do.
See, I've never done that. I only played this one.
Okay. So the later games all add these modes that are really just for therapeutic purposes, I think. And yeah, they create like real intersections from major cities. Like, it seems like on paper, it actually sounds like a really horrible idea. But that's really my favorite part of the game. And I kind of missed it in the GameCube version. And I was not particularly great at it. So maybe with some practice, I get a little better. But like, overall, it's a good racing game for the GameCube. Not my favorite in the series by far.
I thought the graphics were fantastic. I emulated this and yeah, played great. Great graphics. The car handled a lot better than a lot of racing games around that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. And man, when you see those green arrows telling you where to go, you better turn fast or you just smash into something. I didn't know if it would like let me go through and turn me around sometime. No, you just smash into him. But yeah, I've never played that before, so I'm glad you picked that one.
All right, so what do you want to play next?
I'm gonna do a Game Boy game, Super Mario Land.
That is an excellent game.
Is it though?
It is, yeah. Yeah, no, it is. I really like it. I like the sequel better, but
yeah,
the first game is very good too. Super Mario Land 2 is really one of the best portable games, period. Mm-hmm. Not counting Switch, of course, because Switch is, you know, I guess the definition of portable game has to evolve over time.
Yeah.
I'm going to play a game that I played a ton of at Midwest Gaming Classic. That is Gorf. And there are a few home ports of Gorf, but I would recommend playing the arcade version.
Yeah, I'm sure you could even find that on, let's see, we got a link here. What is that? Yep, archive.org.
Yeah, to the arcade. It's probably on some arcade collections. I just haven't looked too hard yet. Mm-hmm.
So if anyone plays Star Wars games or Burnout games or Super Mario games on Game Boy or Gorf, please email us. email@retrogameclub.net. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, probably some other places. Our link tree is on our show notes. And yeah, we'd love to hear about projects and anything you guys got going on. Even if you find some cool stuff to add to your collection. Yeah, anything. And I think we got some emails here.
Yeah, we got an email from Majors about a couple things. Roku, the Roku SDK. Is ponders if you could run Dragon's Lair on it, because people did port Dragon's Lair to DVD players, which is in the catalog we just scanned. There's Dragon's Lair for DVD playable version in there too, mm-hmm. Which would be an interesting use. My thing with the Roku is I don't know if it has, I haven't looked at the SDK yet. I doubt it has much internal storage. So you'd have to figure out how to stream a game fast enough that it would be fun to play.
Yeah. Yeah. And get the streaming rights for it or something.
Yeah. I think whoever owns the rights to Dragon's Lair is not afraid of selling it to literally anyone that wants to produce a Dragon's Lair game.
So let's see. Roku has 256 megs of between 256 meg and 2 gigs of memory, but that's not internal storage.
Yeah. So you'd have to load that. I mean, just thinking through like how you have to load the entire laser. Yeah, it's hard. It's going to be a bad time. Someone might be able to figure it out.
Yeah. Some have, about a gigabyte of storage. So yeah, that's not a lot.
Now these things like the games that were on the interactive fiction competition we mentioned, a lot of those are just basic point and click browser games. Like they're all written in Twine. And Twine really just lets you make like choose your own adventure style games. Well, obviously with more depth, because you like can have the like choose your own adventure. It's a linear plot at the end of the day. Like there's multiple endings, but the world doesn't change as you play it. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas like a Twine game, it's all presented like you get multiple text options to choose from, and the game state can change based on what you choose. So you could probably do those style games on Roku. Maybe my guess.
Yeah. It has a browser, right?
It has to have something. I don't know. This is why I'm debating looking at it, because I do have this one. I have the absolute minimum requirements. I have the lowest Roku that it supports. I have a modern Roku that I actually use to like watch pro wrestling and whatever else is on Roku. But then I have like this literally one of the earliest models, because I bought it for a TV that didn't have HDMI. No, I'm serious. This is for like, the TV by the treadmill kind of situation, right?
Yeah.
So it just had old school AV hookups, and this Roku had old school AV hookups. And it is the minimum model that their SDK supports.
Nice.
What else here? Dune. Why was Dune popular in the 2000s? And it looks like there was a Sci-Fi Channel miniseries of Dune around this era, perhaps. I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember that either.
Yeah. Metroidvania, and whether or not that is a trigger word for people. I just use it because people understand what it means, even though I don't really think Metroid and Castlevania are all that similar.
I try not to use it and then end up using it all the time.
Yeah. Top three Simpsons games. He asked why I didn't include the arcade release. And I said, because it's extremely repetitive. Like for about 5 minutes, you're like, oh, cool, I'm playing as the Simpsons. And then it's like, oh, I never want to play this game again. That's kind of the path it went for me. You really like the arcade game. Do I remember that correctly?
I thought I liked it, and I got a great price on an actual cabinet of it. So I had it in my basement, the full cabinet. But once you get that game on free play, which there is no free play in the cabinet, it's really annoying. So you have to wire it up so you could have a button to install or put in quarters. Anyway, once you go through it once, it's like, cool. Why do I have this here now? I've already played through it.
Very, very, very boring. And then he mentions Retro World Expo in Connecticut was last weekend, which could be 2 weekends ago by now. I don't remember. And recommends that one for anyone that wants to lives in the area. GameCube launch memories. When GameCube launched, it was the same week that Metal Gear Solid 2 for PS2 was released. And he had a party at his condo for both. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
What else here? Speaking of Dave and Buster's, have we ever been to Round 1? I've never heard of Round 1.
Yeah, there's one by my house. So I have one mall in each direction, east or west of my house. And one of them has a Dave and Buster's and the other one has a Round 1. Dave and Buster's has good, legit good food. A lot of games that are fun to play with multiple people. Round 1 has like cheap pizza and some beer, but sometimes it has a built-in bowling alley. The one by my house has an entire Neo Geo section, which is pretty impressive, and like a lot of Japanese games in there. So they're both really fun. You can't go wrong with either.
The two nearest to me are not very close. So I'd be willing to try it, but man, that is, they are really, really, see, one of them, it's not the miles, it's the area. It's that I was looking at where it is in the city. Like, it could be 5 miles away. It's not 5 miles. It's more than 5 miles away. But if it was 5 miles away, it still takes you an hour to get there.
Yeah.
Like, unless you live in that neighborhood, it's not a good time.
I would say if you're bringing kids, if you're going with your family, do Dave and Buster's. If you're going with some buddies, I would do round one.
And then last but not least, he says, if you're getting into the GBA, I think you mentioned you were, highly recommends the two later Castlevania games, Harmony of Dissonance and Area of Sorrow.
I think I just got those on a Switch collection, at least one of them. So I do plan on doing that. Those two I have not played. And yeah, thank you, Majors, for that email.
So a little bit of feedback. We got some feedback on the game on Star Wars. See, never owned a GameCube, but both these games were a blast. Racing game was where the point was to cause crashes instead of avoiding them. In Star Wars, awesome graphics lets you fly all the ships you used to dream about piloting as a kid. Yes, I agree with that. And I guess in social media, we also asked about the Wii turning 15, which we did not plan an episode for, nor do I plan to do an episode about. Modability got some feedback here because it's an easy console to mod. And of course, being backwards compatible is a huge, huge plus.
I did break one, though, modding it. Okay. I had to switch out the motherboard. I did. That's the only console I've ever bricked.
Well, I have a Wii with a dead CD drive. The CD drive does not work anymore. So I've at least debated whether or not to try and mod that one because I can't really use it as a Wii anyways.
Yeah, you don't need to buy anything for it. Just an SD card.
Although was disappointed by lack of proper fighting games like Street Fighter. Someone mentions this is the only console they camped out overnight to get. Stayed outside of Circuit City with my brother and cousin and 10 others. Grabbed a console in Twilight Princess when they opened.
Nice.
Yes.
Circuit City. Yeah, that is definitely retro.
Yeah. Yeah. Camping outside. I'm sure I've told you about it on the show, but one Thanksgiving, I did invite my daughter to drive by the people camping out in front of Best Buy and yell at them out through the car window. Did I mention that?
Yes, I think you did. Yeah. I only camped out for something like that once, and it was for 1994 Lollapalooza tickets.
Okay.
I will never. There was a reason why there was only one time I did that.
When my kids were younger, I had been sent to like some, you know, doorbuster sales to get whatever the Christmas item they wanted. It was never like the hot toy of the year. Like, I just never went for any of that stuff. But a lot of like, oh, this thing that the kids want is like 50% off. And now, you know, it's many years later and my dignity is worth far more than the savings.
Yes. And sanity. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not doing that anymore. And I kind of wish we would drop that culture. I mean, you wonder why it's like hard right now, like we're having a hard time filling retail jobs and stuff. It's a lot of nonsense like this. Like, who really wants to deal with being stampeded at 6 a.m. at Target for, you know, $12 an hour?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did go to Target this week and I noticed that in the PS5 section, they had a big sign about how for the safety of their associates, they will never have PlayStation 5s in the store. You have to order them online and then pick them up around back.
Wow. That's insane. Yeah, Target doesn't carry Pokemon cards for the same reason too.
Yeah, but you can't even order those from Target. Like, they just are like not worth the money for us. But PlayStation 5, yeah, they're literally like you have to drive around back to some weird pickup zone and a guy puts it in your trunk or something. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how people put up with that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at some point, they'll be plentiful, and I'll just walk into Target and there'll be like a tower, like a big mountain. Like I had to run in a different errand today, and I stopped by a GameStop while I was running it. And in the back of the store by the Switch section, they had, I'm not even exaggerating, 50 of the Skyward Sword amiibos. The things that when Skyward Sword launched were just, you know, sold out and being poached everywhere. And now there's just so many of them. They're going to be $4.99 in January.
Nice.
They had, I really, I'm not exaggerating when I say they had 50.
Did you know there's an amiibo EverDrive type thing?
Well, I see people selling the fake amiibos on Amazon, where like they're just little discs that are like an amiibo. They're like quarter sized discs that you can just use.
Yeah, this is like all of them in one. So you just like put what amiibo you want it to act like, and then it does that.
Okay. I actually like the statues. I have all the Breath of the Wild amiibos because they look cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do look cool. I just ran out of space for those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one day I'll create an amiibo shelf. I don't know. All right. We should wrap this up. So again, email at retrogameclub.net for any feedback of any kind. And
Yeah, we're working on some great episodes. And if you could please leave us some stars or reviews. It really helps expand the show listenership. And have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
or whatever else in parts of the world.
Yeah, and thanks for listening.